if you could see those connections, you'd be like, oh, those are the things that matter when you're trying to detect a cat. But you never have to tell it which things matter when you're detecting a cat. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week we talk about AlphaGo saving Google 15% on their electricity bill. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Yay, AI.
Yay, AI. I wish some computer would come and save me 15% on my electric bill.
Don't worry, it's coming. But before we talk about that, we have a couple of housekeeping points.
Yes, some cleanup from last week.
Yes, from our foray back into podcasting. So the first thing was we talked about Tesla in last week's show and their master plan, part two. And one of the things that came up was, will Google's self-driving cars come to market in the same way? And we were saying that, you know, it's not easy to just open up a dealership anywhere you want. Tesla had some problems with that, but we couldn't remember exactly what that was. So we Googled until our Googlers were sore.
It doesn't take long these days, to be honest.
Yeah. Have you in the past year, have you scrolled past the first page of results for any search?
I don't think I have, no.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
Yeah, I'd be searching for something really esoteric.
Mm-hmm. So, turns out that every U.S. state has laws that protect franchisees that sell traditional cars, like GM cars, Ford cars, etc. They have laws that protect those franchisees from the manufacturer themselves opening up and running a dealership in the state, which kind of makes sense. I don't know why the state would care.
It kind of makes sense. I mean, I don't know why it needs to be a law. To me, it just seems like a courtesy and good business to not mess with the people that are selling your automobiles. But
right.
If that needs to be a law, then it needs to be a law. But
right. And so hilariously, these franchisees have sort of trade association or groups or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to extend this protection to Tesla because they're the manufacturer. So they want to open up their own dealerships and sell directly to consumers because it's just a completely different business model.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to take this law that was meant to protect them from their own manufacturing partner and apply it to someone who doesn't care or want it. This is like so.
Yeah. Yeah. And wasn't the argument that they're trying to prevent them from opening a second one? So they're like, no, we're protecting your first one by not letting you open a second one.
It's like strenuously trying to come up with any way to keep out competition. It's like so un-American. Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was one thing we wanted to close the loop on. And there's another thing that we meant to mention and didn't get to, which was that there was the first fatality in a self-driving car.
I had somehow managed to not hear about this, so.
Mm. So this is pretty interesting. I guess a Tesla owner was using full-on autopilot and just totally not paying attention and driving down a divided highway, you know, like not like a interstate that has like a, you know, like a deep median in the middle of it or like Jersey barriers or anything. It looked like more of a, not a country road, but, you know, there were like intersections.
Yeah.
And what happened was a tractor trailer truck coming the other way took a left-hand turn in front of the Tesla, and the it was white, and against the sky, the car didn't recognize it.
Mm.
And the car just like went right under it, and it sheared off the whole top of it, and you know, you can imagine.
Oh yeah, car versus semi wins every time.
Right. And, you know, of course, there was a little bit of a media hoo-ha about it. You know, the guy shouldn't mm-hmm. have been using it in that context. It's only supposed to be used on the highway, I guess.
Right. Yeah, it is.
So, you know, and oh, by the way, there was something like 350 other people that died that day in traditional car accidents.
But we'll not mention that.
But never mind that.
Yeah. It's called beta for a reason. And you should know Tesla's autopilot is not to the point where you can just ignore it yet and go about your business.
Yes. So please use as directed, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Yes. Read all labels before...
Before eating soup and falling asleep at 60 yeah. miles an hour.
It's 60 miles an hour.
Well, that is, I suppose that Band-Aid had to be torn off at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's tragic, but it's tragic and it's horrible. But like you said, 350 other people the same day. And I don't know that I could still put that down to being an error with Tesla Autopilot, because they know that it's not to the point yet where you can do things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the software failed, but it still kind of feels like driver error, because they should know that the software is not to this point yet. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just trying to justify it, but.
Yeah, it's easy to try and justify it. But really, I think at the end of the day, when the cars are 10 times more safe, like when it's demonstrable that the cars are 10 times safer, then you would really be, you know, it's like being an anti-vaxxer, you know, it would just be like irresponsible to not use it.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not going to wear my seatbelt, you know, that kind of thing. So the other thing that I think is an interesting side note is that I don't know this, but the article that I read about it had a lot of very specific detail about the impact and where the car went after it hit the truck. And they must have a black box, like an airplane that, of course, it does, but that has all of the sensor data recorded so that it can be, you know, gone over. So
at least they can learn from it. Yeah.
Right. Like, we know they're already using machine learning to track the information, but one would think, I guess it still could have been anonymized, but if you get it right out of the car, you know, it's from that car, but just an interesting little, privacy consideration for the, tinfoil hats among you. Like, if I want to smash into a semi, that's my business.
Please don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not pretty.
No. Okay, so that was just a little housekeeping from last week. This week, we want to talk about artificial intelligence, which is pretty heavily related. You know, that's how their car is learning. And I don't know, have you looked much into what's going on with machine learning and how that works under the hood?
Not a great deal. Probably not as much as I should have, given that we're about to record an episode on it. But it's still kind of a mystery to me.
Yeah, it's. I looked into it enough to sort of be conversant, but I wouldn't say I know the details. But the kind of the bottom line with it is that the programming that we're used to is called, I think it's called expert driven or expert programming, where there's a person, an actual person or team of people who are saying in this situation do this, in that situation do that, and so everything's like a giant branching if then else type of structure.
Right. We're explicitly giving the computer instructions on how to handle certain situations. And if we don't think of them, then the computer can't do it.
Yeah. Just
like, yeah.
Right. It just pukes. Well, it doesn't literally puke.
No, not literally, but.
That'd be funny.
Metaphorically. Figuratively. Yeah. No, I don't want literal puke from a computer.
No. So the big difference with machine learning, to drastically oversimplify it, is that the program is set up in a way that it can modify itself, which sounds weird, but it's really not that weird. I mean, anybody that has ever written a database application captures information, and the code itself doesn't typically alter based on the data that's stored in the database, but it could.
It could.
So the way that this works is that there are tons and tons and tons of processors that all do one little thing, and it's just the simplest little thing, like, is this pixel black or white, yes or no? And you start off with a giant set of data. Let's say it's a bunch of pictures, you know, millions of pictures. And at the other end, and they're all, you know, and like, you know that 500,000 of them have a cat, and they're all tagged with cat. And then you show them to like a computer vision algorithm, and it just does horribly at the other end, is basically flipping a coin that it's a cat or not a cat. And then you tell if it's right or wrong. You say, nope, that was a cat, or nope, that wasn't a cat. And what it does is it does, what's it called? Backpropagation, where it takes that information and it goes back down through the connections between all the CPUs. And this is why it's called a neural network, because it's kind of like your neurons. And it says, okay, just try a different configuration. Just not even, it doesn't even have to be smart. They just change it randomly. And it goes back down. And this time it gets the cat thing right. So it's like, okay, we did something right. So remember that and keep doing it until we're getting like better than human accuracy on whether or not there's a cat in the photo. And so the connections between all of the these teeny little, like just do one thing, like, is this an edge? Is this an edge or is it not an edge? All of the connections between those things, the connections between them become weighted in a way that allows
it to get more accurate.
Right. It kind of like, if you could see those connections, you'd be like, oh, those are the things that matter when you're trying to detect a cat. But you never have to tell it which things matter when you're detecting a cat. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Cause it figures it out. Yeah. There was a guy in one of Richard's classes back before he graduated. And this guy's senior thesis was all on this, and he had a program that had learned to play Pong. And the way it did it was it kept track of the score and it looked at the pixels on the screen. It's like, okay, is it white? Is it black? And it figured out that, okay, when the pixels are, when there's this sort of configuration and this stuff happens, the score increases. Like, it wasn't like you went in and told the computer, this is how you play Pong. You keep this ball from going past your white paddle. No, but the computer analyzed the pixels and saw the patterns that made the score increase and learned over time that way.
Right. Which sounds impossible that would ever work, but it can play Pong like a million times in 10 minutes.
Right.
So it does some stuff and it's like, oh, I got zero. My goal is to get more than zero.
Yeah. This was a small program running on a laptop, and I think it mastered Pong in like 3 days.
Yeah. I've seen a similar thing with Space Invaders, you know, old school Atari Space Invaders. Was that Atari? Anyway.
Yes, it was.
So same exact thing. You just say end goal is to see this number over here. You want that number to be as high as possible. And it just gets better and better and better. No one ever programmed it. They set up the program in a way that the program could, I hesitate to use the word learn, but I guess that's the right word, could learn what things to do to increase the score. And so this is exactly how the AlphaGo AI beat a human Go player.
Mm-hmm.
They took two different, so the company, you know, it's, I guess, Google now, but DeepMind was the company that they acquired that really wrote the software. And they had two slightly different, so like you seed the neural net with different weights for the connections between the nodes. And so they had two slightly different players, basically, and they just played each other infinitely, like crazy.
Right, because the computer can do that forever.
Yeah, right. And so they don't know. So the game is like, oh, you know, if AlphaGo A won this game, okay, then that one, then something better. So then B has to change something until it can beat A. Now B's better. And then it just goes back and forth infinitely and incredibly fast.
But the thing is, they don't know what's changing.
Yeah, no one knows. Like, no one knows how it, and it's so, and it's such a sophisticated thing that people, I didn't see this, but Go, I've never even heard of Go before this, actually.
You're kidding.
No, I never even heard of it.
That's like the oldest board game there is.
Yeah. And apparently it has more possible board combinations than there are atoms in the universe. It's like,
right.
Unlike chess, it's impossible with our, you know, existing computer infrastructure, it's impossible to brute force Go, because you can't, the way a chess program works is it looks at all the possible combinations for the next move, or possibly, you know, eight moves out, all possible combinations, and it just picks the best one.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can't do that with Go.
You can't do it with Go. It's just, there's not enough computer there. So it has to do something else. And it did, but we don't know what. And when there's one particular move where everybody like gasped, like,
yeah.
So people that were familiar with Go were like, you know, and some people were like, oh, there's a bug. Like, that was a stupid move. And other people were like, that was amazing, which of course would have been totally wasted on me, because I don't even know how, you know, like, I've never even seen the game. I don't even know what it looks like. But, and that was the move that lost the guy the game, basically, you know, the way that the way it was reported. I don't understand it, but the thing, it's just so wild to imagine that, like, I didn't really get what neural nets were until I did the research, because I was like, it can't be writing itself, but it kind of is, because it's changing the weights of the connections between the nodes, and that creates a different outcome.
That's really, really kind of amazing. And the fact that we don't really know how it got to the point where it could win it go is both awesome and terrifying.
Yeah, right. And so, like, the really wild thing about it, not being expert programmed, I hope that's the term. Someone's probably going to write in and tell me that's not the term. But when not telling it what to do, since nobody told it what to do, you can just point it at something else.
Oh yeah.
Instead of go and say, like, okay,
here's cancer.
Right. So the thing is, it needs data. It needs lots of it. So Google said, huh, where else do we have a complicated data problem? Oh, you know what? Our data centers use a ton of electricity, and we've got sensors all over the place in all of them. And they're very standard. They have those, like, shipping containers that are just full of, and they use a ton of energy. Electricity. So they said, AlphaGo, just start watching all the sensors and change stuff. Just tweak stuff.
Figure out how to be more efficient.
Yep, until it goes down. And they got they increased the efficiency of something that had been tuned to death by humans. They increased the efficiency by 15% in, like, a super short time.
Yeah.
And that was just the first pass. In the article, it says that they know where they could do a better job if the sensors existed, but they don't have all the sensors they need. So they're going to add a bunch of sensors that, pick up humidity or something and, let it tweak it more.
And then let it take another pass at it.
Right. So it stands, so it's not impossible to imagine a situation where the pattern matching or pattern recognition capabilities, or just like this type of almost like viral problem solving, you could see it going to a place. It's already done now. Two very clear examples of something that a human couldn't do.
Yeah.
Like, humans tried as hard as they could. World-class humans tried as hard as they could.
And they didn't do a bad job, but the AI did it 15% better.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're just barely getting started. So I was listening to a podcast recently from Andreessen Horowitz, the A16Z podcast. Really good podcast, if you folks are into it. If you're into podcasts.
Which we hope you are.
I'd like to think you are. And it was about, one of the questions is, why is AI happening now? Like, what's different? Is there really?
Is it computing power? Is it cloud computing?
It's all that. It's like a convergence of things. It's the being able to use this particular approach, and this is just one approach to artificial intelligence, but this particular approach requires lots and lots and lots of GPUs because GPUs specifically are good at parallel processing, and you need lots of them, and they need to be relatively inexpensive because you just have to, you need billions of them. Well, that's an exaggeration, but you need tons. And it was just too expensive to do before, but now with like AWS and everybody else, it's not impossible to do that. It's economically feasible to use the programs. So, at the same time, the programs are being written and open sourced. Oh, by the way.
Yes.
So you've got all these people who are kind of standing on the shoulders of giants. They don't have to reinvent the wheel. They can take this code that's freely available and run it on machines that are really inexpensive.
Throw some money at Amazon and rent out some servers and go to town.
And NVIDIA, I guess, is, it's, I think, well known as a gaming chip. Well, gaming chips happen to be really good at this. And NVIDIA and Google's also announced this. They're making specialized chips that are extra good at the kind of processing that neural networks need. So it's...
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of, pundits, I would say me included, can see this kind of turning into AI as a service, where you say, you've got this virtual assistant type of thing that's kind of running on, like, we're already used to the idea of a program being distributed. It's like already, we do this every day. Like, we've got like a single product, call it, that's running on, 10 or 20 machines, and they're all doing their own little part, but it all is this cohesive.
It all comes together. Yeah. Yeah. We do this every day.
Right. So it's not that weird to imagine, you know, like just like Neuromancer, like an AI just kind of floating around in the cloud.
Yeah. And isn't that Google's goal here with Google Assistant?
Yeah, absolutely. To just have it baked into everything. So like it'll be in phones and watches and computers and, you know, it's like, you know, like Alexa in your head.
Yeah.
Yep. And so we were talking about Elon Musk last week and a little bit, you know, in the housekeeping today. And it's, I think, worth mentioning that, you know, that story where, you know, like Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk, and I think there was another famous person, it might have been Bill Gates, were like scared of AI and wanted to stop AI. And that is not the case at all. Like if you actually read the story or listen to what at least Musk says, he's not afraid of AI.
He just wants to make sure there's fair access to it.
Yeah, he's afraid of one company owning it. And that makes tons of sense.
Yeah.
He's like, because his basic story is like, imagine this is already, AI is already so good that it's beating humans, world-class experts at stuff. So imagine as that accelerates and it starts working on itself and it gets better and better and it will have a godlike intelligence. He described human intelligence as cat-like compared to what this thing will be able to do. And only Google has access to it, or only the CIA has access to it.
Yeah, that would be scary.
Yeah. So, or only, you know, Ukrainian hackers have it, or the Chinese government.
Right.
So they started, Musk and some others started, openai.org, which is sort of like an incubator that attracts some top shelf AI thinkers to kind of make AI open for the masses. But it's actually a little sketchy if you read about it. They retain the right to some IP, or I don't know, it's a little weird. But yeah, man, imagine. So like, because what the AI is really good at is pattern recognition, and imagine if you could recognize patterns in the stock market or the weather, but only you could. Right? Like patterns that are there, but are so diffuse and complicated that no single human brain or even group of human brains could detect.
Isn't a lot of stock trading and what have you already done by computers? I mean, maybe not to this extent.
I mean, trades are, I don't know where the decision is made. I think I know that trades are, you know, happen at the microsecond level, like, maybe microseconds is extreme, but definitely at the millisecond level, like the 20 millisecond difference between trader A and trader B's trade going through means that trader B, sorry, too late, it was sold.
Yeah, and it could be that the computers are doing that, but I don't know if they're the ones making the decisions. Like they could just be looking at a preset list of conditions, and then when those conditions are met, they make the trade.
Yeah, and it just seems so obvious. This seems like such an obvious application for AI. I don't think currently machines are making the decisions. I could definitely be wrong, but like what happens then, right? You've got like two AIs going back and forth in the stock market. Like humans are just sitting around like, can we get you some coffee or something?
Yeah. There's no point in us being here. And anybody want to go unplug that so we can have something to do?
So we can go back to the slow, dopey way we've been doing things.
Yeah.
It's wild. I mean, a lot of people with the sort of most wild theories, which is hard to even... It's hard to even make me get to the place where like, oh no, that's impossible. Like I can't even bring myself to be like any of this is impossible. But you know, like coming up with like, if you have godlike pattern recognition, like why couldn't you cure cancer? Why couldn't you see the I guess you'd need the data to like, if you needed to follow somebody through their whole life or something to perhaps get the cause. But you know, looking at maybe there's a pattern in the DNA sequences that humans haven't noticed. Maybe that, oh god, it's just, the possibilities are endless.
Analyze all the scans and tests across hundreds of thousands of patients.
Yeah, and now that you know there's a supercomputer in the pocket of 80% of the adults worldwide, or there will be in the next couple of years, it's like, well, we're all sensor enabled. You could do it.
Yeah,
if everybody opted in. And there's like the, yeah, and then you think like, okay, I can't remember the company name, unfortunately, but somebody's sending up just a ton of stationary orbit satellites that are all the size of like a loaf of bread, like tiny, tiny. And they they have these powerful sort of like webcams that just like point down at the surface of the Earth. So assuming that there's not cloud cover or something, you're going to be able to take a live view of almost every section of the planet.
That's crazy.
And you then, if you have that, then you could say like, okay, you know, like take that data stream, send it into an AI and be like, okay, figure out what Walmart's profits are going to be next month.
Because you've analyzed the traffic flow in and out.
Yeah, exactly.
And how much stuff is in their bag that they're walking out.
Yeah,
with.
Yeah, how many cars are in the parking lot or whatever.
And you know who is collecting just tons and tons of data all over the globe right now?
Well, Google, Facebook. Yeah.
The Pokemon people.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if you could, as you're playing Pokemon, imagine if part of the deal was that all of the video stream that you're not actually capturing video stream in Pokemon Go, but you're pointing your camera at stuff. Imagine if part of the deal was, and who knows if it is, I didn't read the terms and conditions. Maybe they're capturing all that. Imagine that. They can't be. You'd know it from your data plan. You'd know your data was. Imagine if you could just say, this could actually happen. This might be some interesting gameplay to be able to kind of like jack into somebody else's phone. Like instead of chat or voice, you know, it's kind of like FaceTiming someone, but you could hop from person's phone to person's phone. So, you know, like I could say, oh, let me see who's around me right now. And I'm going to hop into their phone and look at what they're looking at. That'd be so wild. I mean, you could totally do this with Periscope or whatever, or FaceTime or anything. But the idea of being able to, but all of those are like either a broadcast or one-to-one communication that's kind of preset. Like somebody says, somebody calls the other person answers, or somebody subscribes to somebody's Periscope stream, you know, and it's like a known party. The projecting party is known, but this would just be like jumping around from open webcam to open webcam, just looking around.
That's scary.
So wild. Yeah, totally. We should do a show on augmented reality.
You should. There's been a lot of augmented reality stuff lately too.
Yeah, and I was not bullish on augmented reality. I was definitely more, I think VR's, I've always been saying that VR is going to happen first, but the massive popularity of Pokemon Go has me changing my thought a little bit on that.
Yeah, same here.
Let's wrap there and plan to talk about augmented reality next week. Sound good?
Sounds good.
That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of two friends who would dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds. If you don't have two friends, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review in iTunes. Thanks.
Walked into the office, wasn't quite sure what time it was, and so I said, Alexa, what time is it? And she goes, it's 8:57 a.m. You know, the light turns blue, she talks. But I also heard it coming from somewhere else in the room. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Did I have a device that updated overnight and suddenly became Alexa capable?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I know I have the app on my phone, and my phone was like laying on the table here, so I turn the phone off, and I ask her again. I say, Alexa, what time is it? And she goes, it's 8:58 a.m. And then I realized I'm hearing the voice inside my head. And then the light on Alexa turns red. And she goes, you don't have to speak anymore. I can read your thoughts now. And I immediately just went, whoa, this is super cool and really scary. What time is it? It's 30 seconds later than the last time you asked. Can we move on now? And then I woke up.
Oh, man.